You won.
You win wars with lots of little battles. And my case is just one little battle in a grand war for acceptance and equality. With the strength and courage provided by my younger and old trans sisters and brothers, we will win because no matter what your label, the important thing is we all want the same thing. We all want to work. We all want to have a family. We all want to be productive Americans. We all want the one thing we were guaranteed at birth. We have the right, the entitlement, for the pursuit of happiness. To my brave trans brothers and sisters, I am Mia Macy, and I salute you.
All right, we are here. It is the Rebecca Giro Show. Thanks for tuning in. Oh, man, do we have a show for you tonight. Yeah. But we got all kinds of stuff going on. We got, you know, end of news. We've got all kinds of good stuff. You know, and I'll tell you, I'll start out. It's interesting. There's a few stories floating around. I mean, actually, it was not particularly a big news week for the trans community. A lot of stuff happened last week, some of which we covered the previous week, or we were going to cover, and stuff that, of course, didn't quite make it onto the show because, well, we had some computer issues last week. So apologies for that. Apologies, of course, to Mara Kiesling, who we were supposed to have on the show. And we'll get her rescheduled. But it's just interesting. A couple of the stories I picked out for tonight I'll tell you. You get to a point where you say to yourself, all right, there are certain people in this country who don't support LGBT rights. And you know what? I won't say there's nothing wrong with that. Personally, I think that's fucked up. But there are people who, for whether it's religious reasons, whether it's moral, whatever the hell they want to justify it with, they don't feel that LGBT people should have access to the same rights as everyone else. But, you know, sometimes they take it so far that it goes from being, I'm standing up for what I believe in, to, I just want to be mean to you because you're not like me. And here's a story. I saw this while I was searching. This is not a necessarily trans relevant story, but I saw this and I was like, you know, the cruelty of this. I mean, the title of this really calls it right. This came to us from Think Progress, and the title of this article is "Ohio Plans Unspeakably Cruel Appeal of Dying Man's Last Wish," and that's exactly what it is. I mean, unspeakably cruel is exactly right. Basically, the story here is there's a man. His name is John Arthur. He's in the terminal stages of Lou Gehrig's disease. He's gay. He's in a 20-year relationship with a man named Jim. Now, their home state of Ohio will not allow them to marry. They have I don't know whether it's a constitutional law or whatever it is, they have a ban. So they flew together to Maryland and were legally married on the tarmac. And bear in mind, this was done in a specially equipped plane because John Arthur is in the last stages of his disease, and this plane had to be specially outfitted just for him. And what's even better is they flew, they got married on the tarmac in Maryland. And on Monday, a federal judge ruled that John Arthur should have the dignity of dying alongside the man that Ohio will recognize as his husband. That comes from the article. Apparently, that wasn't good enough for Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine, of course a Republican. He wants to basically, he filed an appeal because the judge issued a temporary restraining order requiring Ohio to list Jim Oberfeld, John Arthur's husband, as his surviving spouse on his death certificate. DeWine announced that he would appeal this decision. so that, you know, just so he could give this guy dying of Lou Gehrig's disease one more nice anti-gay shot before he leaves this mortal coil. What a guy, huh? What a sterling character. What a leader.
Compassionate conservatism.
Isn't this the kind of guy you want to vote for? Don't you want this guy in charge of your state's law enforcement?
Of course.
You know, it's interesting because the judge actually spelled this out. You know, now federal judges, a lot of them are Bush appointees, but I thought he was so right on in this case. He wrote, "There's absolutely no evidence that the state of Ohio or its citizens will be armed by the issuance of an order requiring Ohio to acknowledge these two guys' marriage. No one beyond the plaintiffs themselves will be affected by such a limited order at all." So the only people who this really matters to are these two guys, one of whom is about to die. But, and of course, Ohio has nothing to gain or lose from this by simply complying with the order. On the other hand, this couple has a lot to lose. Now, thanks to this appeal, John Arthur will probably spend his last days, without protections and never knowing before he dies if he'll have them. You know, it's just beyond disgusting. This is just cruel. I mean, the state does not benefit or is impacted in either direction. This is of no real concern of the court. They could just do the right thing and just let these guys die. Let them die as the people they are. But this bigoted jerk-off, Mike DeWine, Ohio Attorney General, is so bigoted, hates LGBT people so much that he will even stand in front of that simple kindness just to be cruel, just to twist the knife a little bit more. It's bad enough that our bigoted, backward state of Ohio is so hateful that they won't allow these people to be recognized as husband and wife. But now you want to even stick the knife in to a couple that all they want is the dignity of dying and of having their assets legally recognized. You know, and this bigot, Mike DeWine, okay, remember that name if you live in Ohio. Remember that name when this guy comes up for your vote. This is a guy who hates you so much that he will even deny a basic kindness to a gay couple that doesn't hurt or harm the state in any way, just so he can continue being as anti-gay as possible. That's the level of hate here. That's the level of putrefaction that we're seeing of among these hate. I'm at a loss for words. I mean, it's so disgusting. I mean, these two men want nothing more than to be acknowledged. That's all they want from the state. They're not asking for money. They're not asking for special treatment. All they're asking for is for the Attorney General of Ohio to simply comply with the law. But no, Mike DeWine has to fight it because he's got to keep his bigot credentials up. You know, I mean, maybe he's thinking about running for governor or who knows, state senator or something else. You know, remember this man's name. Remember that this is a guy who hates you so much that he will even take away your dignity of your dying wish just so he can buck up his anti-gay credentials. Remember that. Remember this. Remember it next year when these people are running. Because you know what? This is what happens when you put Republicans in charge.
Becky, someone has to be the party of heartless bastards.
But do they really? Do they really, Mike? You know, that's the thing. I mean, we used to have this attitude about black people. We used to have it about all these other folks. In fact, we still do to a large extent. Let's be honest. I mean, there's no... anyone who tries to tell you racism is over, like the Supreme Court seems to believe, is talking out of their asshole and everybody knows it.
That's for sure.
But, I mean... If I could see... If they said, well, you know, this is going to cost the state money, or, well, it's directly conflicting with state law, here's why, or it's going to create a special class, or if they could credibly show anything that said this is going to put an imposition, an unfair imposition on the state in some way that we have not agreed to accept legally by legislation, that would be one argument. That would, I mean, I don't say that I would agree with it, but at least there would be an argument to be made there. There's no such thing in this case. This is costing nobody anything. All it is a kindness to a dying man. I mean, that to me is just, I mean, it's like on the level of kicking puppies. You know what I mean? It really is. It's on the level of torturing small children. It's just, you know, you take the people who are weakest, the least able to defend themselves, and you kick them when they're down. Is that the kind of leadership we have in Chicago, in Ohio? Yeah, it kind of is. Don't forget what their governor, John Kasich, did with the, what was it, Proposition 5, I think it was, the one that stripped union rights, the one that was voted down. Even their own people, the people of Ohio, are better than this. We know, because they slapped down that governor when he tried to strip union bargaining rights. The people of Ohio are better than this. It's the government of Ohio that is a disgusting, filled with festering bigotry and hate. That is what is in charge in the Ohio state legislature right now. Bigoted hate mongers who will not only refuse to help, but will go out of their way to harm us just because we're LGBT. That's the level that we're experiencing here. I mean, seriously. And who's standing up for us? Who's standing up? I have no doubt that there are. There are people. There are journalists. There are, I mean, don't forget, Ohio has given us some pretty damn good legislators. Sherrod Brown, Dennis Kucinich, I mean, good people, okay? But the problem is that the state government is controlled by bigoted assholes. Literally. And you know, that's the thing, I think. I mean, couldn't you at least not be an asshole? I mean, you want to be anti-gay, all right. You know, you're a politician, you're obligated to take positions. Presumably you're taking positions based on what you believe in. You know, I don't have to agree with you, but I can respect your right to say, you know what, this is how I feel. Boom. But do you have to go out of your way to be mean about it? Do you have to go and use your every opportunity to wave the bigot flag and say, look at how much we hate gays? Look at how much we hate trans people? Can't you just now and then say, you know what? I don't personally agree with this, but it's not costing us anything. And part of good leadership would be just to let this go by. You know what? Here's the thing. If you want to look at it from a political perspective, these guys are idiots, okay? Because if they had just granted the thing, they would have got a nice golf clap of applause, and everybody would have moved on. Now, you're being an asshole. This story has legs. You know where I got this story from? I got it from Think Progress, okay? I guarantee you it's all over Facebook, and you assholes in the Ohio state legislature, you're going to be famous. Hear that, Governor Kasich? Hear that, Mike DeWine? Okay? You're going to be famous. Not because you're great leaders, but because you're big, fat, asshole bigots. I mean, is this really what you, you know, think of it from a political point of view. I mean, am I crazy, Mike? Am I crazy?
You are not. This is really the, it's animus. You know, animus was part, I love that word because that came up in Prop 8, the pleadings in California. But it's just that. It's an extension of that. It never goes away with those people. They hate us. They hate us.
Yeah, and it's true. You know, and it's funny, too, because, you know, sometimes you see, and I criticize this, too, you see guys like Larry Kramer, the guy who wrote The Normal Heart, the
sure.
gay playwright, was an activist during the AIDS crisis, and he recently wrote an article that said they hate us, and, you know, on the one hand, you say to yourself, you know, isn't this guy still living a little bit in the 80s?
No.
And you know what? From a New York perspective, he is. From an Ohio perspective, from a Georgia perspective, from a Texas perspective, he's right on the money. You know, and that's the problem. I say this to people all the time, my friends who are here in New Jersey. We say, oh, you know, those days are over. People don't do that. It's like, no, you don't understand. You live in New Jersey, where we have some of the strongest, most progressive laws in the country. We border on New York. Okay, another city with some pretty progressive laws, although they could work on actually implementing those laws, but the laws are on the books. You can't use that experience to judge Georgia and Florida and Alabama and Louisiana and places like that. You just can't. And I think that's part of the problem. Now, anyway, moving on. We still got a few minutes before Mia. One of the things I wanted to mention was I'm sure people have been noticing that the Human Rights Campaign has been doing some good stuff lately. They were instrumental in helping to get Delaware to pass their civil rights law, their trans civil rights law. They brought they helped bring Lisa Murkowski on ENDA. You know, there's no question that they've been using their juice and using some political capital. There's no question that they've been making an effort. But one thing that I think they still have not made any effort on, at least not as far as I can tell, is actually hiring some trans people. You know, it's interesting because they'll go out and they'll say, you know, they say all the right things. I mean, don't get me wrong. That's not a criticism of the Human Rights Campaign. Believe me when I tell you that it is not, because they have been doing the right things. They have been saying the right things. They have been going and putting boots on the ground in the right places. That is not my complaint with the Human Rights Campaign at this time. Okay. Now, granted, this is over the last few months. It remains to be seen if this is a flash in the pan or if this is an ongoing thing. I think we have plenty of reason to question if this is an ongoing thing or if this is something that's just, you know, going to last as long as there's a lull in the marriage thing. Because, well, let's be honest, marriage is going nowhere at the federal level now, and everybody knows it. I mean, the Supreme Court has ruled. Period. End of story. Okay? Nobody's going anywhere there. It's just not, there's no there to go at this point. Okay? The Supreme Court already ruled part of DOMA, the part that would have been covered by the Respect for Marriage Act. That shit's all done. Okay, it's history. So now you got to justify your existence. And people are saying, as I think people like me and other people like me are saying, you know what? We waited while you did your little marriage dance in New York and Maryland and this one and that one. And blah, 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 blah. Okay, you know what? You're done with the marriage dance. Now it's time to start to talk about jobs. God damn it. okay? And I think they finally got the message, okay? But here's the problem. How much credibility does a human rights campaign have when they have one, count them, one, as in one more than zero, but not as many as two, transgender people affiliated with the organization? That one would be Megan Stabler, who is a part-time board member, one among, what is it, 50, 60, something like that? How many board members? So it's insignificant. The last trans staff person that they had that actually worked for the organization was Allison Robinson. She left months ago to go start OutServe, executive direct OutServe SLDN. We all know how that worked out. I would love to know, and I'm going to see if I can get Bryn Tannehill, who's been instrumental in getting the new organization, Sparta, up and running. I'm going to try and see if I can get her on the show, because I'd love to know what Allison's going to be doing now. Plus, Allison promised me when I saw her that she would, this was back in February, that she was going to be on the show, but now I haven't pursued that because I wanted to give her time to, you know, with all the stuff that's been going on with OutServe SLDN. Of course, as you know, OutServe SLDN had a major upset in terms of the board basically ousted her as executive director in what was considered to be a coup, or some in the organization are saying it wasn't, other people are, I'm not going to voice an opinion, but suffice it to say, a lot of people are looking at it as a coup. One of the upshots of that is that several of the local organizations pulled out of the organization, formed a new organization called Sparta. One of the people of whom is running this organization, who's on the board, I believe, is Bryn Tannehill. She is a trans woman, former, I'm not sure which branch of the service she was in, but she is a veteran, and, you know, I would love to get into that with her. But suffice it to say, the last person that HRC had on their staff, who was a trans person, was Allison Robinson. When she left, that was it. And what have we seen since then? Nothing. How do you advocate for trans workplace rights when you have no trans workplace that welcomes trans people? When you won't hire any? When you make no effort? Zero effort. You know, I remember when Michael Cole Schwartz was on the show back in February. It was February? No, May, I think. May. I believe it was May. I think it was May. Anyway, when Michael Cole Schwartz was on the show back in May, he told us, well, you know, we're working on that. Well, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, but that's bullshit. I mean, I love Michael. I think he's a great guy. I love the fact that he comes on the show and talks to us. But I have to say, I think that's bullshit. I think if you want to hire trans people, it's not like there's a shortage of qualified trans people who could work for the human rights campaign. Okay? And furthermore, I'll tell you this. If they put out the word that they were looking to hire some trans folks, I would do what I could to help them do it. I might even apply for one of those jobs myself. Why not? If you're serious about making transgender people a part of your organization, then I'm going to help you with that effort. I'm going to do what I can to support getting jobs for trans people. But when you're unwilling to even do that little, when you're unwilling to stand up, when you're unwilling to be the kind of change you say you want to see, when you're unwilling to go that far, well, I am having trouble seeing a lot of credibility there. You know, and that does not discount all the stuff that they've been doing in Delaware, what they tried to do in New York, you know, the stuff that they've been doing. I don't discount that stuff at all. I don't, you know, I'm not saying that they don't deserve to get some space on this, but you know what? I'm sorry. You know, we talked about this in May. We're now into July. Okay. I mean, I don't see how, you know, let's put it this way. HRC is the largest, best funded LGBT civil rights organization in the country. If they want to make this happen, they can. It's really no more complicated than that. if they want to have trans people on staff, they can do that. They're HRC. They can afford it. They've got the representation. They've got everything that they need at hand to make that happen. So there is only one answer as to why it's not happening, and that resides on Rhode Island Avenue in Washington, D.C. All right, we are about to go to a break. We've got Mia Macy coming up any second now, so stick around. I'm going to take a quick break and go to the little girls' room, and then we will be back with Mia Macy, I hope.
Oh, yeah, falling down.
It's the Rebecca Giroux Show. Thanks for sticking around. And I think we finally have Mia Macy on the line. Hi, Mia. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. I'm so glad you could join us on the show. One of the first things I wanted to ask you about is, you know, a lot of people have heard your story, but I wanted to kind of go back a little, talk a little bit about how this all came about. Now, I know you come from a law enforcement background, and then you decided to apply for a job with the federal government. And to pick it up there and tell us what happened after that.
Yeah, so I was with the Phoenix Police Department, and I was a detective, and I worked in the it was a gun squad, a forensic squad, and so I was recruited by ATF for a position. So when I went out for that position, they started my background. They called, the guy interviewed me, said the job's mine if I want it, barring passing the background. So I filled out the paperwork, started the process, left the department, was going through the background. My background investigator explained to me that I was finished and I could start working in the lab. So we thought everything was honky-dory, and lo and behold, within about 72 hours of me telling them that, or from the contractor notifying them that I would be I would be coming in as Mia instead of my old self, the position was gone. It was magically poof. It was gone because of budget cuts and everything. And lo and behold, what we found out since then is that was manufactured by four individuals, three with the ATF and a contractor, to manufacture that whole story and everything.
Are you saying that there was like actually a collusion here to prevent you from getting hired?
They did, yeah. The final investigation that we got 2 weeks ago, because what I won last year was when I first started the investigation inquiry into what happened with the position, they started seeing some discrepancies and statements and stuff made. So it kept getting moved up the ATF channels and ATF line. And when we got to about the second or third level, they said there could be actually some discrimination here from individuals about you and the position. But because you're transgender, Title VII didn't protect you, and even though everyone else in the Department of Justice, which ATF is under, has to follow those guidelines and protect transgender, the ATF did not. So what they did was they put me in this independent process where they say, well, we'll pay an independent investigator to look into this. But again, they're in charge of that investigation. So during that process, we were still going through with the EEOC, and we moved up the chain and appealed. And that's where we got last year the 5-0 ruling in my favor, saying that transgender, change of sex, and anyone that doesn't conform to gender stereotyping falls under Title VII sex discrimination protection. Then what I won last year was the right to have a formal investigation. And that's what we found out 2 weeks ago, where they did a really great job. The Department of Justice came in and did this investigation. And what we found was, yeah, there was collusion between these three individuals and a fourth person that was the contractor.
Huh. Okay. So now, basically, what you're saying is that there was, I mean, it wasn't like that there was, you know, just one individual. There was intentional, because I hadn't heard this part of the story before, that there was actually intentional collusion to prevent you from getting this job specifically because you were a transgender person.
Yeah,
which I don't think a lot of people have heard that part of it yet.
Yeah, that's what came out 2 weeks ago, the 55-page decision. It goes through all the evidentiary procedure that they did during the investigation, where they not only found the individuals when you go to court, they always say that you have to prove your case. I wanted to prove which one of these people's story was true, because each of these individuals had a different story, and each of these individuals had different remembrances, and it was interesting for us, because all along, the one thing that discredited him, they bring up in the investigation, was the fact that the federal budget never disappeared. It, at the last hour, it was signed in. So these people jumped the gun thinking, you know, they put their cards on the table early and jumped the gun thinking, telling me that I would just buy it, that their budget was cut. But the one thing that always stuck with me was, if you're in the federal government, your budget's always done for at least a fiscal year in advance. So if you hire me in December and then fire me, or say the position's no longer there in April, no, that money should have been budgeted at least till June or July. So for them to say that their budget got cut, there would be proof that they would be cutting those positions after fiscal June and July start. So it never sat right with me. I just, because knowing working in government as long as I have, that I knew that wasn't right, or at least there should be proof of that. And why would you have someone spending thousands of dollars on a background on me if you never planned on hiring me? If your budget was being cut, you would be calling back in January because you would know what was going to happen in June. So right. I always knew that there was some type of lying going on. We just had to prove it. And what the DOJ did was not only do that, but they went really in-depth into each of these people's statements and went back to them multiple times asking them to correct it. And that's where they actually, I think they say in the investigation at one point, it's so convoluted in these people's statements that they're so contradictory that we can't even believe these people. So...
interesting.
That was, yeah, and that's what the decision, if you go to, like, I think it's page 47 or 48 of the decision, it actually says, at this point, it's impermissible. We find 100% that her rights were discriminated, her civil rights were discriminated, violation clearly of Title VII, and in all aspects, I won, hands down, on every key point.
That's awesome. Now, another question I wanted to ask you, because we criticize the Obama administration a lot on this show, particularly for a failure to have the executive order signed by Obama, for lack of support for ENDA, those kind of things. Did the administration itself, did the people at the White House play a role in this? And if so, what was it?
Well, the EEOC Council is made up, and it's like they're appointed members. So on mine, I believe there was two conservative holdovers from the Bush administration and three of the new members from the Obama-appointed members. So it was really neat because, you know, I had 5-0, so they all were in favor with me. But so at that point, yeah, there would be some assist from this administration on putting those people in place that had that. But no, I don't blame them. They've had a lot of trouble with ATF in the past few years, and Eric Holder especially with issues. So yeah, they have stayed pretty much away from distancing. I think they've distanced themselves well from this whole event, because if they did anything for me, it was putting people in place that did do an honest investigation. We could not believe that what we received 2 weeks ago, this in-depth, thorough investigation coming out of the Department of Justice, where they're actually lambasting themselves. And mm-hmm. So that was really great. So putting those people in places, I think, has been really important. But okay. I have not heard. I've been doing this for 26 months. I haven't heard from anybody from any group. There are a lot of nonprofit people before and after, but nothing since.
Interesting. So yeah. Now I realize I don't think you're a lawyer, but how do you think that this ruling is going to play out going forward? How can the trans community use this going forward?
Well, and I think that's where the dichotomy lies. My lawyer and I were talking about this, and we did an interview last week. But one of the things that's most important to me is what I keep hearing is we need to get trans inclusive for ENDA and inclusion for workplace discrimination. And no, I'm not a lawyer, but after doing this for 26 months of my life, and then another almost 13 years of law enforcement. Yeah, it's something you start to learn. What I have been amissed at, kind of mystified at, is it's played more in mainstream or LGB media, but a lot of the transgender groups haven't focused. The fact is, Macy V. Holder, and this we just learned this morning, was used yesterday. The Department of Justice just issued a statement to the Department of Education saying that the Title VII interpretation of Macy V. Holder, saying change of gender, change of sex, does not conform to gender stereotyping, is to be used under sex discrimination cases. So it's now affected the Department of Justice. Macy V. Holder affects everyone working in the United States, in federal government, and in regular work, in civilian work, and in contracted work, any place that has 50 or more employees. So whereas I'm one of these people, I would love to see ENDA get passed. We all want ENDA. I think at the end of the day, you can't get the Republicans and the Democrats to even get a farm bill passed, their own bill that they presented. I think it's absolutely insane to think that this Congress is actually going to do the right thing and protect transgender rights coming up on an election year starting, in 6 months, them all running for office. I would love it? Yes. Do I want these groups to help get it passed? Yeah, but I need the transgender community to know that this is out there. If you're working at 7-Eleven or if you're working at a Costco or somewhere and your employer is discriminating against you because you're transgender, you have an outlet. They actually did a brown bag session on the EEOC's website to train people that work in HRs to understand that Macy V. Holder is basically the law of the land. And when you have a transgender case, it's a sex discrimination case. It falls under sex discrimination. And it's out there. It's been in play for 14 months. And what's so funny is, whereas transgender and LGBT sites don't really promote it, lawyers do. If you actually Google my name or Macy V. Holder, you will see thousands of lawyers. They've understood it, and they've been jumping on it. So for the past year, it's interesting because it has been out there. And I was just excited today to find out that the Department of Education is now going to use that standard. So
that's very interesting, because I actually had my own cases, state-level
yes.
cases.
Yeah.
And basically, I was told by lawyers, well, we're not taking this case because there's no precedent. There's no reason to believe that we're going to win this. So I'm not going to waste my time, is basically what I heard. And now, maybe with Macy V. Holder, this is changing.
No, you're absolutely right. And what was interesting was that's why the EEOC did what they did last year with the brown bag session and stuff, and they started to have the training. Because I was hearing from people saying that, you know, transgender guys and gals across this country, that they were discriminated, but they went to an EEOC office after the Macy v. Holder was on the books, and they're like, they told me I didn't have anything. And my point is, start doing the groundwork. Go to EEOC's website, call the EEOC, find out what you are entitled to at the federal level, because that's just it. The education level in certain states and certain areas of this country still haven't gotten it, like Boston, yeah. New York's and San Francisco's, L.A. Those lawyers have all really, you know, they've read this with a fine-tooth comb, because they can now file a new type of lawsuit that they've never been able to before. And so, yeah, it's just an education. I hate to hear people say, well, it doesn't affect civilian workers. Oh, yes, it does. It actually even says in there, it's anyone with 50 or more employees, any company with 50 or more employees. The EEOC will still assist you if you have a complaint. So I'm mystified. Like I said, I'm really mystified that there's a lot of people that still I think what it was it was systematically downplayed by a lot of groups, because we've been cut out of INDA so many times that every time they tried to pass it, they dropped transgender and they would get it passed, but they didn't. So I think a lot of the transgender groups are afraid that if the word gets out, a lot of the people that are, you know, in Congress in Washington would go, well, we don't need to protect. We could drop it and pass it tomorrow. So I think there's a big fear factor. They don't want anyone knowing that there actually is a protection for them. And what's really strange is it's not a discrimination case under other new grounds. It is a sex discrimination case. So there are certain lawyers in this country that totally understand that. And that's what I hope, maybe as a message. Whereas I love some of the nonprofit groups. I love the work that they're doing. I want to support them and push into the end zone. The reality is we need to tell our brothers and sisters in the transgender community. And that little clause in there that really needs to get out there is does not conform to gender stereotyping. Or does not conform to a stereotype.
Well, that's the other question I wanted to ask you about. Does Macy v. Holder actually apply to non-trans people who are gender variant?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And if you go back to the Macy v. Holder case, and actually in the latter parts of it, the case that they quote the most, one of the cases that had the biggest impact on this was, she is a female, non-trans, birth gendered female woman. She worked for Pricewaterhouse, and a supervisor or somebody told her, you would do a lot better in this business and in this environment if you didn't dress so butch. If you thinned it up a little bit, you would do better. And she sued. And I believe they had it in writing or in emails.
That was Pricewaterhouse, right?
Yeah, that's the Pricewaterhouse case. And that was totally not gender it related to transgender, but it had one of the biggest impacts on my case. There's other transgender cases like Vandy. Her case was really great for laying some of the groundwork for the interpretation, and she's really important on her case of laying the interpretation of Title VII. But that was done in a court setting, so the EEOC weren't challenged on that point. So when mine came along, they needed to have it challenged in an EEOC. So basically what they applied was Vandy Beth Glenn and Price Waterhouse to my case, to their decision.
Yeah, okay, just let me hold on for 1 second, because just for those who don't know, Vandy Beth Glenn was a woman, a trans woman, who worked in, I believe it was the Atlanta, Georgia federal. Was it federal or state?
She worked in the state. I believe in the state house, their Congress.
And she was discriminated against for being trans, lost her job. And then it was found to be discrimination. And in fact, when they found that to be discrimination, one of the people on that, the five-judge panel was, or three-judge panel, I'm not sure which, was William Pryor, who was an extreme conservative, and he was part of the unanimous vote that gave Vandy Beth Glenn her decision. So that's an important case.
And it's so important, her case, because what they applied in Vandy's case is actually what they applied in my case with Price Waterhouse. But here's where their thinking was, and you talk about that conservative judge, but here's where their thinking went, and this is what we've thought all along. And what they actually wrote this into my decision, but imagine if you have, you're an employer and you have a bunch of Muslim employees, and on Friday they leave and they're all Muslim. And then on Sunday they go to church or a new church and they convert to Judaism. And so on Monday you have a bunch of Jewish employees. They all converted and you fired them. That would definitely be religious discrimination.
Right.
So there was no difference in if you had a bunch of male employees on Friday and they transitioned over the weekend and Monday they came in, they're female, and you fired them, because that would be sex discrimination. So it was what they applied in Vandy's on a court level, the EEOC addressed in my level. But yeah, so it's really funny. There's cases that weren't even trans related, which it leads me to where Macy v. Holder is heading, is that little clause does not conform to gender stereotyping, because that can be applied, and there are lawyers already doing this in this country, could apply to sexual orientation.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very interesting, you know, because, I mean, there's been a lot of people, most notably that I know of, Dana Beyer, who have argued that your case and the Vandy Beth Glenn case protect trans people, but not gay people, because, you know, you can just say, well, it's sexuality, which is not covered, as opposed to sex.
Exactly. But so here's where the rub is. You take, and this is a case that hopefully we'll be hearing about soon, but you have two, in Arkansas, you have two male, gay male men. So one of the men works for a, and he's not trans, neither one are transgender or related to trans, they're just two gay men. They were legally married in a state that accepted their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
They live in Arkansas now, and one of them works for the state government. Now, every state employee has the option of putting their spouse on their benefits. He does not, because the state doesn't recognize his marriage. Well, under Macy v. Holder, they're trying, just on the employment benefit side, they're trying to claim that does not conform to gender stereotyping. And it is exactly that. Their marriage does not fit into the gender stereotyping that, that we've come to, whatever, used to or fits into their legal definition. So it will be applied, and it can be applied. And it's one of the things, after spending a lot of time with lawyers, I hate to say this, we don't need a lot. It's almost like immigration reform. We already have really good laws on the books. We just need to enforce them.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same with, you know, with Macy v. Holder and having something already on the books. We already have some really good interpretations of Title VII. We just need people to enforce those or learn about those. Instead of trying to shoot the moon and try to get this amazing piece of work that, you know, this that we would all love, but it's just right now we just need to have every person that feels like that or needs that to keep hunting and finding the lawyers or going to the EEOC offices and talking to them, because the EEOC's done the work. They've laid it out. They laid it out 14 months ago. And so it's tough for me. I'm on, you know, on both sides. I want INDA, but I also want people to know now, at this moment, we have something. And it's just going to take that lesbian or gay couple or bisexual couple to go forward and use this claim to put it on the books.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, another thing I wanted to ask you, because we're running short on time.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you about, folks don't may or may not know, that you are also a radio personality.
Yeah.
You are on a show called Swirl Radio with Michelle Meow, who I met in California a few weeks ago at Netroots Nation. It's very cool. And I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit and let people know what you're doing with Swirl.
Well, yeah. And if you go to my website, I have a website that's anewmia.com. So A New Mia, just the letter A, newmia.com. You can go on there, and we have videos, and I have audio from it. Prior to me going to the Gun Squad and Computer Forensics, I was in public affairs. with Phoenix Police Department. So I did some radio shows, I did commercials, I did stuff and work for the Phoenix Police Department. And then for years I've been doing some television and extra work and stuff like that. So it was a natural progression, not having a job or being able to work. I did an interview with Michelle Meow, and I fell in love with her after the case last year. And then she brought me into the mix of Swirl Radio, and it has grown into this little, nice little, almost like her own little conglomerate. So we are now here locally on an ABC channel. And
now, here being San Francisco area.
San Francisco. But
just
I
want to let
the,
people know.
Yeah, the episodes are up on anumia.com, and they can go and watch our show. It's just getting better, but it's a really great show, and she's done marvelous work. I have a segment on there. And then on the radio shows on Saturday nights here, we do an AM show. It's on AM radio. We do a talk show, and it's basically an extended version of the television. And then she's moving into some more endeavors where almost like a whole little radio studio and bringing on different artists. And I'll move into probably my own hour or half hour show that I'll do a couple times a week. But yeah, so thank you so much, because yeah, Michelle's an amazing woman, and the show encompasses all race, all gender. We joke, but it's the everyone, the elemental P, and everyone in between. And then it does. Just our cast alone, we've got straight and transgender and gay and lesbian, and so it's a really great show. And they're just marvelous people, and we all come from different dynamics. So I adore her. I adore the show. But everyone can go to my website, and then there's links also to the other artists that are on the show and personalities that you can go to, and you can see their clips.
That's very cool. Yeah, I when I met Michelle, she's awesome. I still want to have her on, because I think she's way cool. And anytime somebody starts up something like this, like doing internet radio and stuff like, I'm always one of these people who, I think we need more of this. I'm tired of being one of the very few out there.
Thank you. I think you're amazing. And the thing I think that's so great about getting to talk to you was having somebody and now. Now that we can have an outlet and a voice, I just love, like, the more the merrier. Like, my segment, and this is the thing, I try to keep away. More on the radio side, I talk a little more and get a little more political. But on the TV segments, I wanted to encompass not what you do. There's more people. There are people like yourself that are more educated and the stuff going on in the politics and the community. So I tried to focus on what I love, and I'm a geek girl. So I love movies and video games and comic books. And so for me...
I've been known to get a little geeky myself.
You are too. Yeah, you're a computer dork and like me.
Well, I am. I mean, I'm sitting here. I'm sitting here listening to you, and while I'm thinking about it, and I've got my video game wallpaper up on my computer, and well, I am. I'm a total computer geek. I play things like Star Trek Online and Ion and stuff like that.
I find so many of us in the transgender community, and I think I've gravitated to the groups, but we all, I find it with trans men and trans gals, but we, a lot of us fit into this very tech, or we had to spend a lot of time not having like a lot of friends or whatever. So we read a lot of books, went to schools, went to, took college courses. We spent a lot of time, and there's not a transgender person I met that didn't spend years on the internet researching. Like,
my brother was in college. I was like back in the 90s. Would be up till 4 a.m. researching.
Oh, and there's not one of us that doesn't know a GeoCities site.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I remember GeoCities. I had a GeoCities site. I had my own email list back in the late 90s before there was any such thing as a blog. I was really terrible. It was like my first attempt at writing. I was awful, but, that's what it was in those days.
Well, it was so. So what I'm trying to focus more on are the entertainment, the arts, and the fun side. I told Michelle my ultimate goal is my segment to be like an Entertainment Tonight, where I want us eventually, I know it's great for us to have this trans inclusion and talking like trans issues, but I eventually want it to the point where I thought, I want it to the point where we're just on television, or you're just a radio host.
And you just happen to be trans. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
It's like you're from Iowa. I might not be the gal to do it, but I would love to do the red carpets or the Comic Cons, and it just be a side note to the fact that, oh yeah, she happens to be trans, but who cares? And you move on. And yeah.
I want to be the one sticking the microphone in that person's face is what I want to be. That's who I want to be.
Well, I always say it's like you're from Iowa. It doesn't define me. I really don't like any type of label because people want to, you know, are you cis? Are you pre? Are you post? Are you what? And I'm like, you know, I don't even, I'm married to my wife and I'm me.
Yeah.
And I don't fit a label. And I think that goes also with the trans community. There's a lot of radical, I need this or I need to pass or whatever. But I just think it's just be you. And I think the more of us that are like you and like myself and just out there being us, like Lindsay Walker, I mean, she's an artist. The fact that she's transgender, who cares? You know, she's this amazing comic book artist. So, and cool. Here in the Bay, we have Storm Miguel. The fact that he's a trans man, I mean, who cares? I just love going to his concerts.
Well,
I mean,
you know, the only thing is that I think you have to balance the idea that you know, you want to say, who cares, it's a trans man. But at the same time, you want to say, look, here's a trans man doing something that you've never seen a trans person doing before.
Well, exactly. And to go back, we're not there yet. I mean, eventually. I mean, but we need to do it now. And so it takes you on up on the pike and my head up on the pike. And all of us, you know, having to climb up on it, kind of like climb up on the cross and kind of get stones thrown at us. We kind of have to do that. And it's really interesting because I looked at media. And one of the things that's interesting is, you know, in the 70s, late 70s with Soap and Billy Crystal and the gay men had to always be the prancing neighbor that came in and had to be over the top. They had to take their hits to the point where they could finally have a Rupert, I can't think of his name right now, but they're like Rupert Everett, I think it was, that came out. And they were like, wait a second, here's this, you know, good-looking, you know, gay man. And then it just kind of went to the wayside. Then in the 90s, you had the lesbians had to do it with Ellen, and you had Roseanne had moments on her shows and in the media. And then we, as transgender, we had the early 2000s, we had the Jerry Springer moment, where we had to always be like the chair throw-in, she's a he, and all this stupid stuff. And I think we're about 10 to 15 years behind the lesbian and gay men, so we have to kind of stand up. It is kind of our thing, like you're a transgender woman on the radio. I'm a transgender woman on radio and television. So I think, we need a label right now. But eventually, I think it'll be great where it doesn't matter, that people can just go to a Storm Miguel concert and go, God, this guy's good.
I totally agree with you, though.
Yeah.
Totally, so
it's weird. So I knew kind of even like a year ago when I came out that, you know, it was going to be tough at first. But I also was like, yeah, that's just me. I don't care what, I can take the heat. I being in as a cop and stuff, I've had everything said to me, thrown at me and done. So I wasn't shocked. I was more shocked at some of the LGBT community's responses. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. The negative that I received from some of the people in our community was actually surprising.
Yeah, like, so we're pretty much out of time, but hit me with one or two. We've already run over, so.
We're making time now.
It's okay. The nice thing about having an internet radio show, no commercials, means that it's break time when I say it is, so.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, see, even with Michelle, like when we do the internet podcast, and then when we were doing, you know, a radio and television, you always have breaks. So you have to, like, I love this. This long format is awesome.
Well, yeah, I mean, normally we take breaks at the top and bottom of the hour. That way we have time to get ready the next segment. But, you know, we were having such a good conversation, I just let you go, you know, why not?
I mean, I'll tell you this right now.
Expect further invites to this show, because you're a good person to talk issues with. And you know, we're actually, well, I could reveal this. We're working on a new segment for the show where we're going to have people on, and we're going to take on a topic, and, you know, have people on to just take on a topic. And I have a feeling you're going to be a very good candidate for that particular segment.
Yeah, you can't shut me up. One, and two, I have opinions. So it was great when we first started doing this last year with the interviews.
You're on the radio, so you've got the two major requirements. Nobody could shut you up, and you've always got an opinion on everything, which is, of course...
I love it. Well, they actually told me last year, like, when I was starting doing press for Macy V. Holder, they gave me, like, this booklet of things not to talk about. They're like, don't talk about bathroom issues, don't talk about Inda, don't talk about that. And I was like, the first time I got on the radio with Michelle, I was like, I'm talking about the bathroom, I'm talking about Inda, I'm talking about everything.
I mean, that's, you know, that's the thing, is you know, some people are so... And I've had this with even with writing and things, where people will call you out for stuff. Oh, you know, don't complain about that, because, you know, our poor, delicate politicians might be hurt and offended that you're not 100% on board with everything they're doing.
Well, and that's just it. I love our nonprofit groups. The transgender groups, there are amazing groups. I know a lot of people get mad about, you know, on certain ones they take hits on. But all in all, the fact that we have anybody that wakes up and is fighting for us, I think is great. My problem with it is... I understand they have fundraising. I understand they have things to do to keep their jobs and keep their mission alive. But I'm not part of their mission. And my mission, at the end of the day, is exactly what I started when I started this a couple years ago, is, you know, us, you, me. I don't have an agenda. And I am not out there except for myself. So, I mean, whereas there's a lot of groups, I love what they're doing and stuff, I've had to say, you know, I'm not pushing your mission. I mean, I love you. I'll help you fight in different aspects of it. When I went up to D.C., I really believed in what they were doing about the employers and work discrimination. But, yeah, I don't just sign on for every cause. So I do have an opinion on stuff, so...
Well, yeah, and you should. I mean, if you're going to be on the I say this all the time, but if you're going to be on the radio and you're going to talk issues and you're going to talk whatever, you got to have a, you know, if you don't have an opinion, then what are you doing behind a microphone? That's kind of the way I am.
With you, because I think a lot of people, like, I love your opinions, and trust me, I don't always agree with everything you say.
Nobody does, so don't feel bad.
No one can agree with me, because I mean I know.
See, I don't agree with anybody 100%, not even the people I have on the show.
Well, so. I know, and I believe The Phantom Menace, it was still a good movie.
that's very funny.
In trouble, so.
Oh, my goodness. All right, hey, Mia, listen, we got to wrap this up, because we've already gone almost 15 minutes late. But I want to have you on again, because you are a lot of fun, and I think we have a lot we can talk about.
Yes.
You know, yes, this was good. I had a very good time with this.
Thank you so much. To the beautiful Rebecca, I want to say thank you. And to the sexy Mike, thank you so much also.
Why, thank you.
Mike, you got a sexy.
Yeah!
A sexy old gentleman.
All right, Mia, thank you so much. I will talk soon. We'll talk, because we're going to have you on again very soon.
It was great.
This is a lot of fun. I had so much fun.
Okay.
Bye. Okay. Is Mia off?
Yep.
Mike? Oh, okay. Well, so we are going to take a long overdue break. And wow, that was awesome. I'll have some things to say when we come back. But in the meantime, we have got, what have we got? Mr. Mike told me, and now I completely have forgotten what it was. Oh, yeah. Georgie Jessup, Road to Trinidad. We will catch you in a little bit more than five, gang. Stick around.
I'll be Georgie O'Keefe. Fly me straight to heaven, and I'll paint you a masterpiece. We'll take a slow boat with Shirley. We'll astral plane to the star. And we'll talk with the grandmothers and the grandfathers and trade tales on electric guitars.
Every cowgirl gets the blues. Every cowgirl pays her dues. And every Johnny thinks we'll never make it on our own. When they wake from the dreams they've blown, we'll be in Trinidad.
You better take my six gun before I shoot someone. I don't need my six gun, child. It's too late for me.
Thank you.
Alright, we are back. And that was On the Road to Trinidad. We all know what that's about if you're a trans person. But in any case, we are back. And, you know, I'll tell you, I thought Mia Macy was so good. We are going to have her back on soon. I really had a good time with her. And in any case, it's always, you know, it's always good to hear when somebody else besides me is doing this stuff, you know, because I love doing this show. I will do it until I can't do it anymore because I love doing it. And, you know, the problem is that when we started out, there really wasn't anything out there. Marty Abernathy and I, when we started our show back in 2002, we were the only thing out there. And then eventually we got Ethan St. Pierre, and I co-hosted with him. Marty co-hosted with him. We've traded. Marty and I have co-hosted. And then both Marty and Ethan have pretty much dropped out of the radio thing. Marty has, as far as I know, gone off to go be, I don't know, a girlfriend or something, or has basically dropped out of activism, as far as I know. At least that's what I've read. You know, and Ethan, well, I don't know. Ethan just stopped doing the show. I spoke to him a few weeks ago. He seems to be doing pretty well, but it's been a while, and you know, I don't know what his plans are for the future. So, you know, having shows like this on the air for people to listen to, it's something I consider very important. You know, I love doing my writing, although I haven't been doing a lot of it lately. I love doing it, but you know, it's always great when you see that you're not the only one out there. You know, you got people like me and Macy. You got people who are doing this stuff, and it excites me, because the reason it excites me is because she's good. I mean, you listen to her on this show. I recommend you check out Swirl Radio. I have. It's good stuff. You know, and that's the thing. You know, I say the same thing. I remember when I was an editor at the Bellerico Project, I would get people who would say to me, you know, how come you don't have this person writing for you, or that person writing for you, or this person, or whatever, or how come I can't get a byline at this at Bellerico or whatever. And sometimes it was, you know, well, you know, you're not writing about the things that we want to publish or whatever. And sometimes it was, you're just not good enough yet. Hone your craft, get better at what you're doing, and then submit something new. And, you know, this is the same kind of thing, I think. You gotta have the goods. You know, you gotta be able to say, well, I'm not just going to sit here and turn on a microphone and talk to you. I'm going to do this the right way. I'm going to give you at least as much as within my capabilities, my limited capabilities here, to give you the best show that I can. And that way you can turn it on and you can listen to something that covers the topics and the issues that you care about just as easily as you can turn on somebody else who's talking about something else. And it heartens me, because Mia is right. Mia is right. What we should, the ultimate goal that we should be shooting for, is to say, well, we don't have a trans host. We have a host who happens to be trans. But at the same time, I also believe that there is something to be said for having shows and hosts who say, this is for you. Just for you. It's not for those folks. It's not for those folks. It's not for those folks. It's for you. I am speaking to you. There's something to be said for that. Look at people like Al Sharpton, Melissa Harris-Perry, even Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, people like that. They all speak to a very specific audience, just like I do. In that, we're really no different. You could even argue the same thing about Ed Schultz.
You know, the guy, he has a certain type of content that he does on his show. Very working class. I think he could be a little more working class, but that's a different issue. You know, but each of, you know, you got to have something to say. You got to have something worth saying, and you got to be able to say it well. You need those three things. It doesn't matter if you have good ideas, if you can't write, or if you can't get behind a microphone and promote those ideas intelligently. You have to be able to do both. It's not just about having the intellectual goods. It's about having the performance goods as well. And I'm not holding myself up here like any shining example, because believe me, I'm well aware of my own failings. I'm you know, I'm hardly, you know, I mean, do you see me making any money doing this? But the reality is when you find somebody who's good at it, you want to hang on to that. You want to say, you know what, you want to do this. You know, it's why when I found people doing this, that I made an effort. But the problem is that two people, you know, people sometimes have different lives. And these things happen. You know, people have different lives. And when you're not making any money, when this isn't a job for you, sometimes real world has to take precedence. And that just, I mean, not that this isn't the real world, but sometimes you have to prioritize over other things. You just have to. Because why? Because you have no choice. You just have no choice. Because, you know, if I have to choose between doing the show and, I don't know, getting a job or some other thing that would require me, I have, you know, I have to place that above the things that I do for the love of it. And I don't like having to do that. I avoid having to do that whenever possible. But sometimes you just don't have a choice. And see, that's my fantasy. I would like to be able to do this for the rest of my life and be able to have to make money doing it, to survive. I mean, I'm not looking to make $1 million, okay? I mean, you know, I'm not going to be Rush Limbaugh. I'm not going to be Howard Stern. I'm not going to be one of those guys. I'm not even going to be Bill Press. I'm just going to be me. And so, if I can get through, you know, find somebody who will hire this crazy tranny to go and talk politics for a few hours a day, I'll be a happy camper.
Let's monetize you.
Yeah, well, we've been trying to do that for a while.
I know.
And we're going to do it. And we're going to, you know, but that's the thing. You know, so it's really exciting when you find somebody like Mia Macy, who is clearly knows what she's doing. She's well spoken. She's really can you know, get into it deep, and I like that. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. So yeah, I will say most definitely
that was fun.
We are going to have her on again.
I like that.
She is awesome. Well, look at that. It is pretty much time for our final break. Even though it seems like we just had our last break just moments
well,
ago.
Well, let's see what's in the old machine here. You know, we're having an electrical storm here. If you want a panicky producer, you've got one today, because it's been I've been thinking, well, maybe I should take down all the ham radio antennas that are up there, way up in the sky, acting like a large lightning rod this afternoon. It's very scary here, but so far we're on. This is surprising to me that we are still on after all this activity. It's rather interesting. It's been a bit of a fireworks so far.
The internet radio gods are smiling upon us.
No, it is actually.
Well, they've shit on us often enough, so this time we get their favor to, I guess, to even it out a little bit.
I tell you what, I sent you a little note about Fascinating Aida, but how about Anthony and the Johnsons?
Okay, why don't we do that? Yeah, okay. We'll do Anthony and the Johnsons, then we'll come back. We've got a few more stories we can talk about, and we'll wrap up this last show for July.
Speaking of fireworks,
when we come back.
Okay, here we go. Here's Anthony. All right.
Sticking around, and we got a few more stories to talk about. Let's see here. Well, here in New Jersey, we've had an interesting. We've got a new coalition forming, just formed to push for an override of Governor Christie's veto on marriage. Now, first of all, it should be pointed out that Christie. They're just, from what I understand, one or two votes shy of doing this. Very close. But now, this is a broad-based coalition. It should be pointed out that 64% in a March poll of New Jersey residents support marriage. Only 30% opposed. So we're the most LGBT-friendly state in the country that doesn't actually have marriage. Now, the group is called New Jersey United for Marriage, and it has some pretty big heavy hitters in this. We got Garden State Equality, the American Civil Liberties Union of New Jersey, the American Unity Fund, Freedom to Marry, Gil Action Fund, HRC, and Lambda Legal. And what they're saying is they're promising to broaden the existing coalition of supporters to engage new groups, including Main Street businesses, large corporate employers, industry organizations, and Republicans. Well, I mean, it's nice to hear that. But here's the reality, and I can say this as somebody who lives in this state, who's worked in this state, okay? These are not the people you have to convince. Okay, I mean, you know, they're saying broaden the coalition to engage new groups. Main Street businesses are on board. Large corporate employers are on board. Industry organizations are on board. Okay, the problem is the last word in that statement, Republicans. That's the problem. Okay, and these kind of bullshit, mealy-mouthed excuses that organization, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think this is a great effort and it should be commended, but you know what? Don't hide the truth. Come on. Don't be playing these little political bullshit games. I mean, it's frankly ridiculous, okay? I mean, we all know what the problem is, and it's spelled Chris Christie. Don't try and say, oh, we need more support from Main Street business and corporate employers. That's bullshit. It's bullshit. Corporate America has been on board with this for a while now. It's the fucking Republicans. Call it what it is. Don't play these mealy-mouthed political bullshit games. Okay? It is Chris Christie and his spineless Republicans who won't buck him. That's the problem. Because in order to get gay marriage in this state, you got to have a few Republicans on board. And none of them will buck Chris Christie. That's the problem. Don't try and muddy the waters with this bullshit of broadening coalitions and crap like that. Because anybody who lives in this state knows that that's utter bullshit. This is one of the bluest states in the nation. Don't try and feed us this crap. Tell the truth. Okay? And you know what? I am a big fan of Garden State Equality. I have been for many years. They stood up for us back when we were fighting for the trans civil rights law. This is not a dig at them. It is not a dig at this effort. It is a dig at their messaging. Don't try to muddy the waters. Don't try to make this bullshit argument. Oh, we have to broaden you don't have to broaden anything. What you have to do is broaden the minds of Republicans is what you have to do. That's what you have to do, because that's what this is all about. But let's not forget something, okay? Although, I'll tell you, I've heard things from Garden State Equality and other affiliated organizations. They're trying to make us all forget that the reason that we don't have same-sex marriage in this state right now, today, is not because of Republicans. It's not because of Chris Christie. It's because Democrats caved when they had the votes, when Steve Sweeney, the Senate Majority Leader, could have brought that to a vote and made it law, and he caved like a fucking coward at the last minute and took several Democrats with him. That's what cost New Jersey same-sex marriage. It would be law today if set for spineless Democrats like Steve Sweeney. And if that's inconvenient for you, Garden State Equality, I'm sorry, but I'm going to call it out, even if you don't think it's politically comfortable to do it. I'm going to tell the truth on this show. And the truth is that the reason why we don't have same-sex marriage in New Jersey today is because of cowardly, spineless Democrats who caved at the last minute when we had a governor who would sign the bill into law. Sure, it's easy for them to say now, oh, well, yeah, we're right behind you, because they never have to take a vote on it. Oh, veto threat, sorry, we're done. You know, I mean, it's easy for these guys to campaign on this stuff. But the truth is that if Democrats had acted like leaders 5 years ago, something like that, if Democrats had acted like leaders when it mattered, same-sex marriage would be the law of the land today. And that's really what it boils down to, okay? Yeah, Chris Christie is a shit, okay? He's an asshole. He's totally self-serving. Everybody knows this. This is not news. But trying to blame Chris Christie for the reason that we don't have same-sex marriage in New Jersey is like trying to blame, I don't know, like trying to blame Barack Obama for the state of our economy. You know what I mean? It's like, he didn't cause it. He didn't cause it. That happened before he got in office. Okay? Now, granted, we had a major league fuck-up in the White House before Barack Obama. But so you can't turn around and then say, well, you know, it's Obama's fault that we have a bad economy. No, he got the bad economy. Same thing here. Okay? You can't blame Chris Christie for no same-sex marriage. You had the opportunity. It was there for the taking. It was Democrats who caved when the going got tough. The tough ran. That's what happened. And let's be honest. That's what it's about. Okay? Now, I think Democrats have been suitably chastised. They would never dare stand against it now. But you know what? It's easy to say that now. Where were you when we needed you? It's the same thing with the federal Democrats. You know, it's easy to say, oh yeah, rah, rah, we support ENDA now. Well, where were you in the 111th Congress when we needed your votes? When we needed you to stand up? When we needed you to act like leaders? Where the fuck were you then? Okay? Don't give me this mealy-mouthed crap about Harry Reid. Oh, we're going to bring it up for a vote. Yeah, and then what? Okay, what, you gotta bring it, you send it over to that house, the same house that's passing farm bills and cutting off food stamps? You mean that house? The same house that mealy-mouthed Barack Obama and his mealy-mouthed press secretary keep saying, oh yeah, we're supporting that. Of course, they don't do anything, mind you. They've put no effort into it. In fact, if anything, they've gotten in the way of it.
you know, but, oh, no, well, you know, we have to convince the president. I mean, come on. This guy's not a moron. We don't have to convince this guy of anything. Okay, this is a president who made a political calculation, just like Steve Sweeney, to throw people under the bus for political purposes. That's what happened, because that's what these Democrats do. When the going gets tough, these Democrats cut and run. That's the problem. It wasn't politically convenient for them, so, well, you know, you can wait another generation. Just like in 1997, when they threw Enda under the bus, just like in 2007, okay? Because, well, it's not politically convenient for us, so we're not going to do it. Why? Oh, well, we don't get enough MSNBC airtime. And you know what? You see the same thing today. Okay, how much airtime? I mean, granted, MSNBC, to their credit, has covered Enda several times. It was even on Matto at one point. I give them credit for making an effort, but you know what? It's still barely a drop in the bucket compared to all the coverage. Every time somebody in the gay marriage movement farts, they cover it. I mean, you know, so comparing it against the same-sex marriage coverage is a joke. I mean, literally a joke, okay? I mean, you know, because that's the MSNBC audience. MSNBC audience is what I like to call six-figure liberals. Six-figure liberals. They don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from. They're okay. They've got the rent paid. They can afford those Lincoln Continentals they advertise on the network. You know, those Jaguars and stuff like that. They're not hurting for cash. So why should we give a shit about employment rights? Now, marriage, that's different. Marriage rights, well, people save money on their taxes. And, you know, those six-figure liberals care about that. And that's still what we're seeing. Yes, it has gotten better. But is it good? By no means. And you know what? That goes back to what I was talking about with Mia. This is why you need people like me. Why you need people like Mia. Why you need people who go out and cover the issues that if we don't cover them, they're not going to get covered. Okay? The only way that they're going to, that you're going to see them is either if you look in LGBT specific media, or every now and then they'll make it out to the mainstream. Every now and then. But that's the problem. Is every now and then, you know, with marriage, it's every 10 minutes. You know, and I'll tell you, I have to tell you, I think it's a lot of it is these folks, let's be honest, MSNBC folks in particular, they're very wealthy. They're very white for the most part. I mean, do you think it's a coincidence that the best person who's doing the best coverage on Enda and workplace rights and transgender people is a black woman? Melissa Harris Perry, do you think that's a coincidence? I sure as hell don't. I'll tell you that right now. Okay? And I think it's the same problem as we have with the Human Rights Campaign. These wealthy, detached people who can't understand, they don't see the importance of, you know, feeding your family. You know, what they see is what their friends see, is marriage, 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 because that's what their celebrity friends are all talking about. So that's what they want to talk, that's what they think the rest of us are talking about. The problem is they don't live in our world. They live in this celebrity world where everything is spoon-fed to them, and they only hear these carefully vetted, you know, political speeches from these political people. They circulate in events where every utterance is carefully politically calculated, and that's what we get. You don't get these things. These people don't live in the real world. I mean, even a guy like Ed Schultz, who I think is, in a lot of ways, is great. I've had issues with him. I've written about his issues I've had with him. But, you know, he turns around. He's a man of the working people. Then he goes tell him, oh, I'm going to hop on Ed Force One and go hunting this weekend. Well, what he means is he's going to get on his private plane, fly off to North Dakota to go hunting over the weekend. I mean, does that sound like somebody who understands what your life is like? Seriously? I mean, and this is, again, I want to specify, this is not an attack about Ed. It's just an attack on a lack of connection between these people who are doing this kind of work and the people who are paying attention.
And I would like to see more of an effort made. You know, I mean, it's one thing when Ed Schultz goes to Wisconsin to talk to union members. How about you talk to some of the people who don't have those jobs, Ed? How about you take the microphone away from the cops and the firefighters and talk to the people who have been homeless for 6 months? Talk to those people. Talk to the people who have been without work for 4 years. Talk to those people. Talk to the people who are really at the bottom of the barrel. You know, I mean, you see this, it's rare. It's unfortunately, it's getting less rare. Like I said, you've seen this on Melissa Harris Perry. I think she's been terrific. There are a few things I would like to see that I haven't seen yet, but she is absolutely making an effort. She does a great job at it. I won't say I have no complaints, but my complaints are minor, and I'm willing to, like, just, you know, give her a chance to. But you know, when you have to fight, literally, you have to fight to get some coverage on Matto. I mean, that tells me, it's like, you know, you want to ask the question, don't you people get that in order to have a decent marriage, you have to have a job and a place to live and a way to put food on the table and a way to, you know, pay all the expenses that forming a family creates? You see, but that's the problem, is they don't cover that because that's not part of their world. When they have an expense, they just write a check or they go doodle-doodle-do on their iPhone and it's all taken care of. They don't have to worry about such things. So they don't, you know, I mean, you know, what does Ed have to worry about the homeless? I mean, you know, when things get too tough for him, he hops on Ed Force One and goes hunting. I mean... Don't give me, again, I don't want to act like that's a criticism of Ed. Okay, I mean, the man worked damn hard for what he got, and that's not, you know, I'm not, but I'm just saying that there's a detachment there. You know, they don't live the lives that reflect the lives of average, normal people who count the amount of dollars on their paycheck, and they look at it, and they determine how much money, you know, what they're going to be buying at the grocery store that week, because they have to worry about how much money they have in the bank, that they have to make choices like, do I have a full dinner tonight or do I put gas in the car? You know, those are the kind of issues, the kind of issues that people are dealing with every day that these guys never encounter. And I think it shows through the coverage, where it's marriage, 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 and oh, yeah, 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 oh, all right, yeah, jobs. Well, because they never have to worry about these things. And again, I am not calling them out for being wealthy. These folks worked damn hard to get to the positions that they got to. And I'm not calling them out for being wealthy. What I'm calling them out for is not taking the time or making the effort to connect with those who are not, to reach out and have a better understanding of those who are not in their same circles. And I think that's a problem. And I think that's part of the reason why conservative radio and conservative television like Fox is kicking the liberals' ass, because they do exactly that. They speak to the issues their audiences care about. They make it a point to speak directly to the people who are listening, not to this fictional group who have the most money. They speak to everyone, whether you can afford that Lincoln Continental or not. They're talking to you as a conservative watching Fox or as listening to Limbaugh or whoever. Whereas the liberals don't do that. They're all about, you know, let's monetize this as much as possible. And so the way to get more money is to just, you know, speak to the people who have it, which is what Democrats do, basically. And is it surprising that they don't get the listenership?
It's easy. I mean, I'll solve you this problem right now. I have no experience as a program director or as a station owner. I will solve this problem for you right now. Speak to the issues people care about. Don't give me high-level, highfalutin politics that only matter to some insider in the Beltway. Talk to me about the issues that matter in my life. And then you'll have a new listener or a new viewer. Talk to me about what matters to me. That's something, again, that conservative hosts and pundits do very, very well that the liberals just suck at. They just suck at it because they're just not connecting. You know, there are exceptions to the rule. But, you know, while you're going off on the minutia of, you know, is Edward Snowden saying in Russia or is he going off to which country is he going to? You know, while you guys are getting into the minutia of that, people are worrying about, well, you know, how am I going to eat tonight? Oh, my God, I think my landlord's going to throw me out for being trans. You know, the issues that people care about, the working class, which is, let's be honest, what most of us are. You want to attract those audiences, MSNBC? Speak to them. Speak to the people. Speak to the working class. Speak to the people who need to hear a voice that's standing up for them. Not for the wealthy. Not for the suggested Arbitron demographics of your network. Speak to the people who actually are paying attention, to the people who are driving those trucks, to the people who are driving those soccer vans, to the people who are driving around town doing their shopping, to the folks who are listening because you're the only person on the air that speaks to their issues. You know, I know a little something about that. I started out doing this myself. And guess what? For the most part, here I am. You know, fortunately, we got people like Mia Macy emerging. We got people like Janet Mock emerging. But we still need more. I mean, there's really just not a lot out there. And and Mr. Mike is reminding me it's 5 minutes to go.
I'm very persistent then.
Yes, he's good. He keeps me on track, which is good. But I would love to see. I mean, I think MSNBC in particular has made a great effort over the last few months to be more trans inclusive. I love that. I think it's great. It's so great to see it when Enda appears on the Rachel Maddow show. I think it's great when Melissa Harris-Perry has Janet Mock on. Not only to talk about being trans, but also just to have her on to talk about television. She had her on to talk about Scandal, that show Scandal, which I don't happen to watch, but a lot of people like it. And that's great. And, you know, that's when Janet went from a trans guest to a guest who happens to be trans. We need more of that. But we also need more going the other way. Okay? There's a reason why certain hosts are as successful as they are. Al Sharpton, Travis Smiley, Cornel West, Melissa Harris-Perry, all these folks, they speak to a specific audience. That's why they are successful. Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, all these folks, they speak to a specific audience. They generate loyalty. You know, I'd like to think I do a little bit of that myself. At least I hope I do. But the reality is as much as I can do. We need more people. We need more access. And that's the problem, is we're not getting it. I think we need to get more proactive about this. I really do. Because, you know, honestly, if we don't come out and start saying this is who we are, if we don't define ourselves, then other people are going to do it for us. And we all know how that works out, doesn't it? Don't we? And, oh my goodness, I think we are out of time. Oh my God. Where does it go, Mr. Mike? Where does it go?
It's all behind us now.
It's all behind us now. We will be back next week. Don't forget, if you missed any part of the show, don't forget, we will be rerunning after a lovely musical interlude from Mr. Mike, so stick around for that. The podcast, Mr. Mike Swears to Me, will be up tomorrow. And we will catch you next week with an all-new show. Not sure who's going to be on yet, but we'll let you know. All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Talking about some real sick stuff here. Man on man, hairy baby, BDSM, bottoms acting like tops, tops acting like bottoms. It's just the whole world gone topsy-turvy.
You won.